I'm here with Elliot Landy. He was the official photographer of the Woodstock Festival in 1969. It is amazing to have you here. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, too. Really.
So you were one of the first music photographers to be considered an artist. Why is that?
It was actually true. I mean, when I look back in those years, 1969 or so, photography wasn't really considered an art yet. I was living in, when was it? In 1970, 71. I was living in New York City. I had moved to New York City from Woodstock because we wanted to leave the United States and live in Europe. And I was trying to earn some money. So we sublet a loft in Soho. Soho was is the artist district. It was an industrial district that they that no one was allowed to live in except artists. So I had to qualify to live in Soho. And there is a five-story building, one loft to a story. And downstairs, there was a sculptor who was a plumber. There was a painter who was an electrician. There was another guy who was a carpenter, and so on. And I was the only one who lived from my artwork. I was the only one who lived from photography. But the local community found out that I was living there, and they said, you don't qualify. You're a photographer. Photographers don't qualify as artists.
Why doesn't it qualify?
So. Was 19, I don't know.
What did you say to that?
Why doesn't it qualify? Because people have minds that continue to think in the way that they have thought all their lives. That's why it didn't qualify.
When we try and maintain the status quo, it's just part of like our human survival instinct,
right? Exactly. Is that part of human survival instinct?
I mean, I think so. Your body physically does that. Like we were talking about weight earlier and food, and you know, here in the South, we try and feed people food even if they don't want it. But I mean, it's... that's why it's hard for a lot of people to like lose weight or even gain weight, because your body actually works to maintain what you have. Isn't that kind of odd? Yeah.
Is it odd? I don't know.
I mean, it's...
I'm not qualified to answer
that. Something that we're constantly fighting.
People's minds are blessed with the ability to change. I guess the body is different than the mind.
Yeah.
The mind is... We have the option to control our bodies with our minds, to heal ourselves, to control how we eat, how we drink, whatever we drink, and how we treat people. Well, one of the things, since we're here to talk about the 60s, one of the important things about the 60s, the 60s was a very deep, philosophical, spiritual time. I say spiritual because to me, spirituality is finding the essence of life and finding where you belong in that. And some people wonder why they're here. That's not that important. You just do what you do anyway. And one of the philosophical understanding in the 60s was the importance of change. And there's a Chinese book, ancient Chinese book, called the I Ching. That's I hyphen C-H-I-N-G. And that is an oracle. And you would throw coins or it was yarrow stalks or coins. Yarrow stalks are like straws.
Wow.
And whichever way they fell would tell you what part of the book to read. And there's all these, it's really quite amazing, especially when it works. You know, when you when you're asking a question, so you ask a question and you throw the coins or the yarrow stalks, and when it speaks exactly to what you're asking, it's mindful, kind of like tarot does sometimes. The ever presence of change is a fact of life, and it's a question of how we respond to it. So there are different ways to understand it, different ways to accept it, or to dispute it, to try and fight with it, and or not to allow it to happen. And so when you're fighting it, you can't fight it because it's going to happen. That's the nature of life. Every moment that we're talking, each of us is changing. We're losing some cells, gaining others. So it's a natural thing in life. So this book, I Ching, really talked about the place of change in life. And that was one of the main lessons that that we, meaning me too, as students of that philosophy, that time in the 60s, the so-called hippie culture, one of the ways that we learned about what life is about, how life works.
Tell me about the Woodstock Festival for those, I mean, God forbid, those who don't know about the Woodstock Festival.
Well, the town of Woodstock is the oldest continuously functioning artist colony in the United States. And the town itself was the site of an artist colony that was founded in 1901 to allow craftspeople and artists to live together and work on their projects and sell them and create a community that way. So it was the goal was to create a utopian artist community. And that continued functioning for all through the 19th 20s, 30s. When I was living there in 1968, I moved there because I was photographing Bob Dylan and the band.
Right.
And my photography had gotten successful, mm-hmm. and I was looking for a new place to live in New York City, which where I was at the time. And I like Woodstock better than New York. I said, well, I'll get a house in Woodstock, and I'll keep my little studio in New York and go back and forth between the two. So I was living there from late 68 on. Michael Lang moved up to Woodstock, and I knew him casually. My sister introduced me. She knew his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And we would just hang out on the Village Green sometimes and talk. And one day, Michael called up, and he said, can I come over? I want to talk to you. And so he came over on his motorcycle, and he said, I'm producing a concert, which I didn't know he was a concert producer at all. I'm producing a concert. Do you want to photograph it? Because he knew my photography. So he said, do you want to photograph it? And I said, who's playing? And he told me some names of bands. I don't remember which ones. And they were important people mm-hmm. playing. And I said, sure, I'll do that. Absolutely. And he said, okay, great. He says, I'll call you when I'm ready. And he gets back on his motorcycle and he rides away. And as I say in my book, it wasn't even a handshake. He said, you want to do it? I said, yes. He said, cool, groovy, probably groovy, groovy. Like that. But it was a time of trust. That's why. It was a time of, we didn't talk about licensing. We didn't talk about how much I'm going to get paid or not mm-hmm. get paid. It was a time of really trying to do what you want to do. So that's how that happened for me at Woodstock. So the festival itself, though, was not in the town of Woodstock. Originally, they wanted to have it in the town, but the mm-hmm. town wouldn't allow it to happen for whatever reasons. So they had to look for different places, and they wound up being almost 2 hours by car away from the town of Woodstock.
That's crazy.
Woodstock was a utopian moment mm-hmm. in American culture and world culture, where 500,000 people under very difficult circumstances got along beautifully. Everyone was considerate of each other. People helped each other. There was no violence that was reported in over the whole 3 days. There was mud. There wasn't enough water. There wasn't enough food. And people who organized the festival in the beginning were helping, were like food was helicoptered in for people, which couldn't get in and out at all. So it was really an example of peace and love and harmony, which is what the goal of all religions is, to live beautifully. So I think that I say that Woodstock should be studied, the underlying philosophy, the philosophy of life of the people who were there, which was part of the so-called hippie generation. Mm-hmm. And the hippie generation is often diminished in media. But it was really a very deep time, very, very deeply spiritual, philosophical, but in a pragmatic way. Mm-hmm. So young people were looking for the meaning of life for them, and why are we here, and what can we do about making things better, and how do we behave towards each other? How do we respect women? How do we respect the earth? These kind of movements first broke out into the public eye, into the public domain, public vision during this time, during the 60s. And Woodstock was like that. It wasn't a single person that did it, but it was really an example of how you can live peacefully with a lot of people in difficult conditions.
What did your pictures at the time, taking them, what did that mean to you? And afterwards, when you were developing them?
Yeah, when I was publishing the photographs, I was inviting people. I felt like I was inviting people to be part of a new culture, to be part of a new way of being, where in the 60s you can dance. You didn't have to do the waltz or the four-step or whatever. You can move any way you want to move. You can twist your head or your back or wave your arms around, keeping what you thought was time to the music.
Yeah.
And when you went to the Fillmore East, people were smoking grass, so you'd be offered a joint. And immediately you were amongst friends. And all the musicians were against the war. Almost everyone I saw at the Fillmore was against the war, and they would speak out about it also. So really it was building a community. And I felt that when I was showing pictures of Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin, I was inviting people to be part of this new way of thinking. It was a new way of being.
Yeah.
We don't have to think in this fear mode. that we're in, that we're going to lose out to other countries, that they're going to attack us when they're not. The communist thing is a perfect example of that. There was no attack going to happen to us. We were creating it in our minds. Yeah. At that time, that was the big thing, communism. People that want to operate in a fear and an angry mode create names for things that we should all be afraid of, that they say we should be afraid of. So this new culture was arguing against that, was saying, hey, peace and love, you know, and this is how we can be. So that's what I could do. And mm-hmm. it was great. I loved it. But then within a year and a half or close to a year and a half, probably, I just was bored with it.
You were just bored with it.
I wasn't inspired anymore.
Oh.
I was bored with it, and I was turned off by the business aspect of it also.
Mm-hmm. Got commercialized.
The record labels were not friendly-wise, there were money issues, and everything was a hassle business-wise. And one time when I was photographing, I found myself thinking about what the art director wanted while I was taking the picture. And that was like a shock to me, because I didn't like that at all, because it was a disconnect between the reason I take pictures, because I love to take the picture and I love to show what I'm taking a picture of.
Right.
So if I'm doing something for somebody else, that connection is not there anymore.
Right.
And for me, the connection to taking pictures, to art, whatever you want to call it, is, I'll use the word holy, because holy means something that's really part of the essence of life. Mm-hmm. It's a very deep, deep set feeling in life. So I don't mean holy in a religious sense, but it was an important connection that I had and loved to have. Mm-hmm. And when I found myself thinking about what the art director wants rather than the pure beauty and form of the image, so that disturbed me.
Yeah.
And there was another moment I remember where, again, while I was photographing, I was thinking about how I was going to sell the picture. As I was photographing. And that, too, had the same effect on me.
Yeah.
So those things, so that I realized between that and being bored with it, that I just really didn't like to do this stuff anymore.
Mm.
So I stopped.
There's this word that I really love, and it's just sanctuary. This idea of sanctuary in yourself, in your inner being. Mm-hmm. And it's where you keep your art and your passion and your mental health, your peace of mind, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it really is like a sanctuary. It's just for you. And when you allow, like the art director, like you said, or how am I going to sell this? You're kind of actually allowing this outside force to come in and take up residence in your sanctuary.
Beautifully said.
Thank you.
Beautifully
Thank
said.
You.
Really, that's exactly right.
That's what it made me think of. I was like,
Yeah. And some people keep this sanctuary experience for themselves, and some want to share it. Some
mm-hmm.
people have no trouble. My granddaughter's 14 years old. She's got her own YouTube channel already, and she's a great artist. She draws animations, beautiful animation stuff.
All right, so let's see. Let's do a little bit of bookkeeping here or housekeeping. So the show is from July 21st to October 13th. And let's see. And that's at the Huntsville Museum of Art, the Huth, Boeing, and Salmon Galleries. What do you hope people will take away from the gallery at Huntsville Museum?
A love of beauty. I hope that the beauty that I've managed to capture and share will stay with people.
Mm-hmm.
Because the more beauty you have, the happier you are. You can look at a flower also, if you really get into looking at a beautiful flower, or the river outside this building even is gorgeous.
So yeah.
I'm sure it must be extraordinary with the light at a certain time of day.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful, yeah. So that's what I hope. And the experience of what the 60s was like, mm-hmm. I try and communicate it as best I can I tried to in those years.
Awesome. Well, I think that pretty much wraps up the interview.
Okay.
We've got everything that we need.
Okay.
Is there anything that you would like to throw in there? Any questions that you feel like I should address?
This is radio, right? So I can't describe my favorite picture. Okay.
You can if you want. Yeah. What's your favorite picture?
How are people going to see it, though?
They go to the show.
It's in the show, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a website?
We do have a website.
Can you put the picture up on your website?
I can, yes.
You do that?
Yes, yes,
okay.
I can, yeah.
So it's a picture that it's a close-up of some people in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And the center of the photograph is this very attractive blonde-haired woman. I don't want to say blonde woman.
She the one with the blue balloon?
Yeah, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know the picture with the blue balloon? Is that why?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I looked through it.
I mean, did you notice it?
I did notice it. Yeah, it stood out to me. I like sat there for a second and looked at it. I mean, I don't know why it had that effect
think?
On
I'm
me.
I'm going to ask you what you think about it. Then I'll tell you what I think about it.
The thing that I noticed with it, everybody was sitting so close together, and it just kind of seemed like this sea, almost, you know, like when people sit down in like this this field of wheat or really tall grass. It was almost as beautiful as that, except that it was made up of a sea of people, and they were all seated, I think, and they had these balloons, and I wondered what the balloons were for, and she just kind of had this look on her face like she was having a great time, but she was just relaxed.
That's nice.
That's what I pulled away from it.
I've been thinking about this for a while, and she's the first thing that I say about this picture is that she's quite comely. She's quite attractive, but she's not being sexual. She's not using her physical beauty to attract anyone or to control anyone. She just is that way.
Yeah.
And she's very much into herself, into her sanctuary place. It looks like, as you just said very nicely about that. She's connected to her essence, let's say. Mm-hmm. She's in her sanctuary place there. And she's grooving on the music. You can see she looks stoned. Maybe she's not stoned. I don't know. But she's grooving on the music, and because she's looks like she's moving her right arm up and down. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's in the middle of a motion. You can't see that. And the way she's holding the balloon, she's not grabbing it. She's caressing it. So it's very gentle, very feminine, caressing, not holding on to. And all the people are very crowded in, but no one's uncomfortable with being close to each other.
Exactly.
Because that's what Woodstock was like. Mm-hmm. Everyone knew that there was no danger from anyone else near them. So people can just relax and be part of a sea of people.
Right.
And when you're part of a sea of people, as you alluded to, your minds join together.
Yeah.
And that's what happened with Woodstock.
Elliot Landy, thank you so much for coming in to interview. We're very excited about your gallery show at the Huntsville Museum of Art. Can't wait to see it.
My pleasure.